Thank you for joining us for today's episode. You're listening to The DeMartini Show. It's the podcast for visionaries. If you're driven to make a difference and you love making progress in all the seven areas of your life, then you're in the right place right now. There's no doubt that the current global pandemic is driving many people to innovate, adapt, and take new actions. But what happens when you have a great idea, but you just don't seem to take the action steps to achieve it? And you find yourself procrastinating, hesitating, and holding back. Now, more than ever, we need to get ourselves out of our own way so that we can take the action steps towards our goals and dreams. This presentation addresses not only what stops you from getting into action, but also what you can do to overcome the inertia and create a mindset that enables you to gain governance over your life and take the action steps to create what you desire. Get ready for a powerful presentation and make sure you have your pen and paper ready to take notes. Enjoy.
So can we start with just first outlining what is your definition of fear?
Okay. Fear is an assumption that you are about to experience in the future through your senses or imagination, real or imagined. More drawbacks and benefits, more negatives and positives, more pains and pleasures, more disadvantages and advantages, more losses and gains, more challenges and opportunities from somebody or yourself or some environment. So it's an assumption of a one-sided pull of more drawbacks and benefits that's about to occur. And it initiates inside our brain and nervous system an autonomic response of fight or flight, generally, or in extreme cases maybe freeze. But it will make us either, if we think we can defend it and fight against whatever this fear is, we'll shackle it. If we think we can't, we'll withdraw from it, or we'll freeze. But it's a perception, an assumption that there's going to be more drawbacks and benefits. And I'd like to make a statement about that. I don't know if this is one of your questions, but studying fear, there's a number of basic sources of it, but there's two primary ones. And because of our animal nature and our subcortical brain responses that are still within us, like in the animals in the food chain below us, we seek prey for food and we avoid predator because we could be eaten. So the perception of loss of that which we seek, which is food, the perception of loss of that, which is starvation, is a fear. And the perception of gain of that which we're trying to avoid, which is being eaten, is a fear. So there's two primary fears that all fears, every fear in our life, all revolve around two forms. The fear of loss of that which we seek, and the fear of gain of that which we're trying to avoid. Now, anything that we seek is something that supports our values. Food is something that supports our values. It's anabolic. Anything that challenges our values, we try to avoid. Our animal nature wants to avoid predator and seek prey. Therefore, it wants to avoid pain, seek pleasure. It's a hedonistic construct. So anything that we perceive that supports what we value, anything that allows us to survive as a mortal surviving creature, that we fear the loss of, can become frightening. Anything that could stop us from surviving, so attacking us, challenging us, the fear of gaining of that will do that. Now, there are seven areas of life that we can categorize life into. Although many thought leaders have done different categories, I use seven. That's our spiritual quest, our desire for living an inspired mission. Our mental quest, our desire to wake up our innovation, creativity, and genius, and be intelligent. Our business quest, to be able to contribute a service to people and generate income as a business. Our financial quest, to be able to build financial independence. Our family quest, to be able to have love and intimacy and family and partnership. Our social quest for social influence and power, making a difference. and our physical quest for physical well-being, beauty, and you might say attractiveness and vitality. In the process of doing that, all those seven areas, all because we have a mission to fulfill those, anything that helps us fulfill that, that supports that objective, that we lose, it's going to be frightening. Any of those things that can challenge that, that we could gain, that could challenge that, gain the challenges that, that could threaten those, we can have fear of. So the coronavirus could be a challenge to us in business, could be a challenge to us in finance. It could be a challenge to us physically. It's now in some degree isolative in the sense of challenging us socially. And it could affect, because we're such close quarters and we're not possibly used to that, could cause challenges in the relationship. And we can start losing, if we have a delusionary faith that somehow the supernatural force is supposed to protect us from that, we could have a loss of what we have a belief system about our spiritual quest. So we can, as a result of this scenario, because of our perceptions, add to the idea of fear associated with all those. It all boils down to how we perceive things, though. Because our fear is a perception, an assumption, we're about to perceive more drawbacks and benefits. And that's the key that we have in our capacity to change our perception. Now, we've had situations in our life that we thought were terrible, and we assumed the worst, and they didn't turn out to be what we thought. I'm pretty sure that most people who's listening, who are listening, have had moments where they've had assumptions and they were frightened about something that didn't turn out to be the case. And we have what is called false positives, assuming something's there and then it's not. So many of the fears are false. False evidence appearing real, F-E-A-R, some people call it. And some may be real, some may be more threatening. But fear is an assumption that we're about to experience in the future through our real senses or imagination, most imagined, more drawbacks and benefits, more losses and gains. But I wanted to develop it, that into those areas to see that there's a lot of different aspects of the fear. But they boil down to two: the perception of loss of that which we seek, the perception of gain of that which we try to avoid, in any of those seven areas of life. So it really is looking like there's 14 variations in those seven areas. The loss of something we want in those areas, or the perception of gain of that which we don't want in those areas. All of those can initiate fear and compound and superimpose on top of each other and escalate and become associated over time and become anxious driven. So it's all our perception. We have the one thing about a human being is we have self-reflection and we have self-governance and the capacity to change our perceptions. Some animals learn by trial and error, and they're living by impulses and instincts, but we also have the capacity with our intuition to alter the ratios of our perceptions and change things. Anaxagoras, 2,600 and something years ago, said that pain and pleasure, phobia and philia, are a result of lopsided perceptions. And it's still accurate today, even though 600 years have passed by. So I hope that answers that first question.
Thanks for that, Dr. DeMartini. The one that we got is also, what happens in the mind of somebody that has amazing business idea, but they just can't get it off the ground? Can you explain the role of fear in this situation? What's happening in the mind of somebody that's got fear?
All right, that's a good question. I got to develop that like I do. Yeah. My kids sometimes say, I don't want to know your answer. It's too long. they now they appreciate it, but when they're young, they didn't. So now
we've got time.
Okay, so the way the brain is set up with layers, it has stages of development through the eons of time. If you look at all through the vertebrate lineage, you'll see that although there were the same areas of the brain, forebrain, midbrain, hindbrain, and each species in the vertebrate kingdom had different levels of development and accentuations in each of those areas. We have a very large telencephalon, but some animals have different levels of the brain that's more heightened and usable. So we have layers of the brain, and the more advanced layers of the brain, there's more order and organization, refined skill. And then the more primitive, if you will, or maybe not primitive is a good term, but the ones that lower species had more developed, they have less order and organization. They have order and organization, but it's less coordinated compared to what we can if we live in our executive center in our forebrain. And so we have an amygdala, which is a subcortical area that is the fight or flight mechanism to survive, because we have a survival. Whenever we get distressed in our perception, which is phobias and philias, we go and bring our blood glucose and oxygen into the more hindbrain area of the brain or the subcortical areas. And whenever we're in inspiration and we're grateful and we're loving, we move into the forebrain. And therefore we feel order and organization versus disorder, disorganization. So we thrive when we're seeing things in order, and we survive when we're things in chaos. As a result of that, the forebrain brings objectivity and brings a balanced view and brings order to our perceptions and sees things more, not polarized, but synthesized. In the hindbrain and the lower centers, we are reacting as a survival mechanism for fight or flight from the predator and rest and digest for the prey, and we're highly polarized. So if we live by our highest priorities, live by what's most important, live by where we're inspired spontaneously from within in our highest value to act, we're more objective, we're more strategic, and we have foresight to be able to see challenges, mitigate the risks of them, and respond without hesitancy or reaction. We have more wisdom and we act, not react. But if we're not living by highest priorities, highest values, and we're in reactive mode, we become more subjectively biased. And we skew things and twist things in a way that we're not seeing what's actually there. We're seeing false positives and false negatives. We have biases. And as a result of it, we distort our reality. And then we accentuate the desire to seek the prey and avoid the predator. And that's the problem with these subcortical regions. We tend to accentuate the why, is because in order to survive the predator, we had to have false positives to assume that it's there when it's not, and to be alert in a why, you know, alert to get out of there, or the same thing for finding prey, to get it and to go running after it. So we have to almost lie about what's there, distort things in order to survive, to capture prey and get away from predator. But when we're objective, when we're centered, we're not fighting or seeking like that. We're not in eat mode or rubbing heat mode. We're objective, and we see things as they are, not as we distort it. So when you're setting a goal in business and you're in line with what your values, highest values are, and you're pursuing what is deeply meaningful and inspiring to you, where you accelerate spontaneously action, and you have foreseen the challenges, so you have more of an objective view, a more balanced view, and you're ready to handle things, you're not anxious. But when you're not, and you haven't foreplanned, and you're reacting and setting up a fantasy of getting a prey without a predator, pleasure without a pain, ease without a difficulty, you set up a fantasy. And that fantasy is different than an objective. And somewhere in between it, we call them goals, but many goals are fantasies. And whenever you set up a fantasy, it's like trying to get a one-sided magnet, a pull, positive pull of a magnet without the negative side of the magnet, and it's not going to happen. So your mind automatically creates fears, phobias, for every philia and fantasy they pursue. So when somebody is hesitating in a career path or a job or a business, I assure you, even though they may not want to admit this, I assure you, you have some portion of what you're striving for that's a fantasy, which brings spontaneously in the brain up a nightmare, a philia, and a phobia. and you have fear and you hesitate on it because you innately know that a fantasy is non-existent, but an objective is obtainable. So the wisest thing to do when you have a fear of that nature and you're not taking actions towards the goal in business is to stop and ask yourself two things. What is the highest priority action I can do today with the resources you have available to you today that will serve the greatest number of people's highest values, which is your market, in the most effective and efficient way, in a way that would inspire you? If you focus on that solution, the moment you do, and you write down what are the highest priority actions, as long as you get into action that are highest in priorities, not only do you get out of the amygdala and get away from the fantasies and the phobias, but you actually are solution-oriented, not problem-oriented. And you get into action towards something that gives a solution to what you think is the problem. But this is what wise people will do. They won't speculate with false attribution biases and distortion and projection biases that they know what people have and need. See, a lot of entrepreneurs get out in the business world, and they make an assumption that if it's important to them, everybody, it's important to everybody. And that's a narcissistic exaggeration of self. And anytime you project your values onto clients or customers, you can get humbled. It may not match their needs. So you can't guess whether that meets their needs. You need to do a little market research and make sure that what you're going out to give matches what they need. And with now with the coronavirus and the changes in the environment and things going online more, the needs are tweaking. And an individual that's lived by their highest value is able to adapt and make gradual, incremental changes to keep up with foresight, looking in advance of what the market's doing and meet the needs. When they do, they have a demand for their supply. And it's much wiser to have a demand for your supply than have a supply without a demand. But if you're living in your amygdala, because we have a tendency to go after fantasies and we have a tendency to go to a bit proud, we tend to not care and listen to a real customer need, and we tend to project our needs onto them, what we think that they need, and their highest value that we can't wait to get up in the morning and serve that really meets the need. If it doesn't meet a need, there's no demand and there's no business. So your fear is not your enemy. So many people say, oh, I got a weakness. No, your fear is not a weakness. I've interacted with people that have all different scales of empowerment. And there's not one individual, unless they're lying, that doesn't experience fear at times. And the fear is your friend because it's letting you know every single time you're pursuing a fantasy. And a fantasy is anything that has got more positives and negatives, more gains and losses, more pleasures and pains. And even though you're making decisions based on what you think is going to give you more advantages and disadvantages, nature has a way of having a balancing act. And so like a magnet, if you think you're going to get a magnet and cut it in half and get only a positive pull out of it, it's going to be futility. As I've said many times, the Buddha describes that the search for that which is unobtainable, the positive pull of a magnet, and the search to avoid, or the goal to avoid that which is unavoidable, the negative pull of the magnet, it's the source of human suffering. But if you understand that everything that comes in life has the pull, both sides of the magnet, you know, you get a new relationship. Most people have had a time where they've met somebody, they were enamored with them, infatuated with them a bit, and they go, oh, well, this one's going to have more advantage and disadvantage compared to all the other ones I've had. And they think this one's got more positives and negatives. And then they get in there and start dating and working with them and find out that they've got a new set of pains that go with that pleasures, a new set of challenges that come with those opportunities. And you were a little bit eluded. And eventually you learn to appreciate both sides of that individual with their unique sets of positive and negatives. So a real objective is balanced. A fantasy is polarized, and a goal is somewhere in between for most people, somewhere between fantasy and objective. And the forebrain is the executive center, and the forebrain is designed to strategically plan to transform fantasies into objectives. And the amygdala is designed to avoid a pain and seek a pleasure, which is a fantasy, because you're not going to do it. In fact, the moment you pursue a one-sided world and the other side smacks you, we call that distress. But the moment we are actually, and that leads to illness, and the one that is actually going forward with objectivity, seeing both sides, preparing, meditating on the evils, if you will, and having a contingency plan ready for them, so you're not reactive, you're proactive, and you're fully aware of both sides, you dissolve the fantasy, and now you're prepared for the so-called nightmare. It's neither. You transcend it, and you get into action without hesitation. That's why if you live by your highest values, you spontaneously are inspired to act because you see both sides and you're able to have foresight, and those that have foresight or vision flourish. And those that in the amygdala, they only have hindsight from learning from what didn't work because they went after fantasy, ooh, got smacked by it and had distress and disease. The symptoms of disease and distress are feedback mechanisms to show that. I just watched a video today, this morning, by a professor at MIT, has 3 degrees, 3 PhDs, very smart guy on immunology, virology, things of this nature. And it shows very clearly that some of the things we're actually doing, isolation, which helps run down our immune system and makes us unprepared, it also creates a depressive state because of we're not interacting and getting reflective awareness as much, unless we're going online and interacting, which is another alternative. We actually accentuate the very reduction of the immune response to assist us. And this gentleman was basically emphasizing how important it is to do anything that raises your immune system and resiliency. When you live by your highest priorities, highest values, I'm absolutely certain because you're more objective, you're more resilient. Because resiliency is the ability to not fear the loss of things you seek and not fear the gain of that which you avoid, try to avoid. You're more neutral. Whenever you're neutral, you don't react. When you're the rare noble gases in chemistry are unreactive, what they call group 8 octet rule, full electron shelled atoms that don't react. They're neutral. And all the ones on either side, group 1 and 7, they all react. And so when we're living in our highest values, we're like rare noble gases. We're light, we're rare, and we're noble. And if not, we're reactive. And we're polarized and valent and emotional. And when we do, we lose our power. As Warren Buffett says, don't ever expect to manage money as long as you got emotions. And Robert Greene said, don't expect to be a leader if you have all these emotions. You have to be able to transcend the emotions with objectivity and be able to self-governance if you want to master your life. So individuals who are having difficulty in business are pursuing, in all probability, some portion of fantasy, goals that are not really truly objectives and thought through. And there's a hesitancy inside the action automatically because your own mind and intuition make sure you hesitate on fantasies until you get clear. When all of a sudden you do your planning and break down your project into smaller bites within a time horizon that you live in, and you see the action steps and you can see what's going on, you get a result and you take action. There's no such thing as fear of the unknown. I hear that every week. People tell me in breakthrough experience, you know, I have fear of the unknown. There is no such thing as fear of the unknown. I've never found it in 47 years now. I used to think it existed, but I've never found it when I really went in there and looked at some. You have fear of the content that's ruminating in your mind that you're imagining at that moment in the future. And that is because of subconsciously stored baggage from all of the distorted views in survival in the past that you've never neutralized and cleared. One of the reasons I do the breakthrough experience, when I tell people, just come and learn this tool, is I've developed a tool to neutralize that. So you're not weighed down on, because most people are run by their subconscious mind, not their superconscious dreams. And as a result of that, they're weighing themselves down gravitationally and hesitating and procrastinating and frustrating because they're striving for that which they're trying to seek and trying to avoid the pains. And they're living in a polarized state. The Stoics, Aristotle, many of the great minds, Parmenides, they all knew that that hedonistic pursuit of the one-sided world is the very source of people's suffering. So that's why I give the people the tool on how to neutralize that, dissolve that subconscious baggage, to liberate people so they can set real goals, real objectives that are balanced, prepared for both sides, and foresight what they are, prepare, plan, and implement action. The executive center is designed to execute strategic plans that you see in your mind's eye that have been broken down into parts. And an individual that cares enough about the customers, find out what their needs are, finds out what they love with an equitable manner. That means you do something that's inspiring and meaningful that you can't wait to get up in the morning and do, and you go and deliver something that they can't wait to get. And you do that, you got a demand, you'll get this supply, you're gonna build momentum. And if it's foresighted and planned and it's thought through and you know for sure you're delivering it with no question certainty, you've done your homework, you'll get into action and you'll change. And right now, we're at the tail end because it's about to go back to some degree of like it used to be, where you'd actually go out in restaurants and stuff like that. That's all about to happen. Right now, you're at the tail end of an opportunity to do those planning. And people, they don't make, as Alec McKenzie in his time trap showed, that people who are lead, not follow, the executives, not the workers, if you will, the ontological designers, not the deontological duty-oriented people following what other people tell them to do. Those are the individuals that spend the most time planning. Somewhere between 70 and 100%, 90% is planning and then delegating things. And the individual that's working, you know, surviving, they're working 70, 90%. And they don't ever think and plan. And it's the people that have foresight and plan and get present with those plans and make sure that they mitigate the risks and think they're the ones that lead the way. And they're the ones that take action without all the hesitancy. So right now, take advantage of the last days that you have to get really clear. And planning is not just sitting there and analyzing and planning. It's actually caring enough about the customers to find out what they need. That's part of the planning process. And then test that. Look at what the market's buying, because somebody out there right now is booming. You know, the people that are doing home deliveries and the people that are doing online stuff and everything else, they're out there cranking out. They're busy. So there's been a shift. And if we haven't had foresight to see that shift, we'll get the tail end of it. And whenever you're in the tail end, you walk in what's behind you. You walk in what other people leave.
Listen up. Imagine knowing with absolute certainty that your life is working for you, that you're on track and that you're making progress towards the goals and dreams that you desire every day. If you've been an avid listener to this podcast, you'll have heard Dr. DeMartini mention his signature program, The Breakthrough Experience. It's a two-day weekend seminar where he shows you how to take everything that you've been learning on this podcast and put it into practice so that you can gain the shifts that you most desire for your life. If you would love to transform your life, and if you've been a little bit uncertain where to start or how to get there, then join Dr. John DeMartini at the Breakthrough Experience so he can show you how. What you'll learn in these 2 days is truly life-transforming. It's time to put the power in your hands to create your magnificent life. To find out more, go to demartini.fm/seminar. You can also access the link in the show notes below. We look forward to seeing you there. And now, let's continue with this episode.
Behind them instead of you leading the way. So make sure you know the difference between a fantasy and an objective. Live by your highest priorities and values, and you'll wake that up, and you will get into action. You won't hesitate. But if you're hesitating, it's because your mind knows you're anxious because you don't have a plan. You don't have the specific action steps you know to get you a result. You're not meeting somebody's need where there's a demand, and you're setting up a fantasy and reacting impulsively towards a pleasure to avoid some pain.
And then Dr. DeMartini, what is the difference between fear and anxiety?
Okay, well, in our brain, we have receptors peripherally at our nerves for all the various senses, tactile sense, mechanoreceptors, pain sense, free nerve endings, eyesight, ears, right? We have many senses, 110 senses. Most people think of 5 basic ones, but we now know that our immune system is actually sensing the ratios of bacteria, virus, rickettsia, worms, et cetera, parasites, and feeding to the brain information to make sure we have the right proper microbiome, for instance. So we have a series of senses, receptors. The receptivity is based on our bias and our values. When we live by our highest values, that receptivity is more accurate than if we live by our lower values, then we skew our perceptions. So if you want to have a more stable mind, you want to live by high priority again. Once we take those receptivities in, those receptions of information in, we compare it to what is stored in our subconscious mind, which are the impulses and instincts that we have in the past that have never been balanced. And they combine in, as we go up the brain from reception up to the higher level of the brain, they get combined and they make associations. They cross over the other side and they come up with the same side, ipsilateral and contralateral sides of the brain, and they have these receptions and interactions. And they create associations. And those associations can be excitatory and accentuate the perception, or inhibitory and calm down the perception, bring it more towards balance, or accentuate and dramatize it. So in other words, if we have a, let's say we had a relationship with somebody that had dark hair or something, or light hair, doesn't matter, colored, dark hair, and they had curly hair or dark hair or whatever, and because of it, we've had a really painful situation with them. Now we meet somebody else that's got dark hair and curly hair, we can have an association. Watch out. Don't trust that person. Be careful. Listen, but don't just jump in on that one. So our past experience is going to influence that new one. And if we had extremely painful situations in the past, we can accentuate with those associations this new information. So the difference in a fear, which is an assumption that there's going to be more drawbacks and benefits from that new experience as a result of that past experience, is anxiety is now the compounding of that. So every time we have more and more data coming in that we store that's polarized, and it's now added to this new step, this new reception, we can actually have an anxiety. Anxiety is primary, it's secondary, tertiary, and quaternary compounding of an initial fear that's live right now that we're receiving in our mind. We're perceiving more drawbacks and benefits. It's compounded by all the associations. And every time we get new associations, that original fear gets expanded to many, many different stimuli, to a point where there's sometimes hundreds of stimuli in our environment reminding us of something that we had, something in the past that was pain without a pleasure, that we're now thinking in the future is going to be more pain than pleasure. So anxiety is a fear, but it's a compounded fear by secondary, tertiary, and quaternary means, layers and layers of new associations. So let's say you have your mother and father are fighting, and you're a little child, and you see it, and you crawl to your bed and underneath the bed and hide and close off your ears, close off your eyes, and you just feel the vibrations of their yelling. And the next morning you get up and they're not yelling anymore. And you went to sleep that way with that anxiousness, that frightening situation. Next morning you get up, and because daddy had blue jeans on and a white shirt and mommy had a certain outfit, the next morning daddy's gone, there's no fighting, kind of calm, but you go to the grocery store with your mom and you walk down an aisle and you see a guy with blue jeans and a white shirt and brown hair like your dad, and he's approaching mom, and it brings up an association from the night before that you assumed was more pain than pleasure, and frightened because your mommy who takes care of you, you're afraid something's going to happen to her, and then you feel threatened. It's a challenge to your value system. So you're frightened that there's going to be more drawbacks and benefits there. And now you see somebody with a white shirt and blue jeans and brown hair, and it reminds you of that. So you now have anxiety. And then it walks by and you calm down. And then you go down another aisle and you see somebody with blue jeans, yellow shirt, brown hair. And even though it's a yellow shirt, it's not white shirt, there's still enough stimuli there that's similar to what the night before is. It can remind you of that. But in your brain, you're now associating yellow shirt and white shirt with blue jeans. Then you go down another aisle and you have somebody with blue jeans, white shirt, blonde hair, and mustache. And now you go and you associate blonde hair and a mustache with that association. And that's why you got hundreds of different little stimuli and associations all linked in the brain through a continuance, associations, that all of a sudden you can walk down the street and there's hundreds of things making you do it. And you feel this anxiousness. You don't even know what it is because you forgot what the original issue was. which is the fighting of the mom and dad. So these compounding and associations can lead people to anxiety. In the breakthrough experience, when I have somebody that has an anxiety, I actually have to have them stop in the moment and actually get present in the moment and identify what the fear is. And don't run a story, don't run bullshit. Just dramatizing and running to your therapist and running and tell people stories or anything else is just the most foolish thing you'll ever do. Stop, identify what specific trait, action, or inaction are you perceiving yourself or others doing, some individual doing, that you perceive's got more drawbacks than benefits, more negatives than positives, and identify it and get clear on it, be methodical about it. And then in that moment, we can go in there and find the upsides to it and neutralize it, because there's no one-sided event. There's no magnet with one side. Every event has two sides. If you choose not to see it, it's because you're skewing and you're distorting your reality. But there is no one. Nothing can manifest one-sided. There's no monopoles on the planet. Morals that put people into positives and negatives and goods and bads or whatever are signs of narrow-mindedness. A person that has self-governance transcends that. The person that doesn't have self-governance needs external moralities to govern them as an authoritative figure because they blame things on the outside, look for something on the outside to save them. But an individual that's living in their executive center and it's an objective sees both sides of the event and they don't see it one-sided. But if you're seeing it one side, it's because you're not seeing the whole thing. You're unconscious of the downside. When you're infatuated with somebody, you're conscious of the upsides, unconscious of the downside. When you're resentful to somebody, you're unconscious of the upside. You're conscious of the downside. When you're seeing somebody for who they are and you love them, you see both sides. And the truth is they have both sides, but you're not seeing them. So you have to be accountable for that. It's not the world out there doing it to you. You have to be accountable in your own reality. The moment you actually have that, and you go and ask the right question. In the breakthrough experience, I teach people how to ask the right questions to neutralize the mind so they're not accumulating subconscious baggage in their subconscious mind, which is they're storing all these lies about life and adding to the associations of all new stimuli coming in. Because that's the thing that skews and distorts and messes up your magnificent reality of life. The truth about life is it's magnificent, but we don't see it because we got all the subconscious baggage stored there. So in breakthrough, I go in there and ask, show you how to ask new questions to make you fully conscious of the other side. And once you see both sides, there's no philia, there's no phobia. There's no fantasy, there's objectivity. And then you take actions because you're prepared and you don't have this hesitancy. So yeah, the anxiety is a compounding of an original distortion that was in a survival perception, primarily because of accumulated subconscious information compounding the original perception, leaving you vulnerable, trying to get you to realize that you've got baggage back there that you haven't cleared and that you're not seeing reality as it is, because there's nothing to be frightened in reality. It's just distortion, most of it. And so in the breakthrough experience, I'm constantly showing people how to dissolve that. So they're not let the world outside run them. I said in The Secret many years ago that when the voice and the vision on the inside is louder than all opinions on the outside, you begin to master your life. And when your innermost dominant thought is clear and not distracted by distortion, your innermost dominant thought becomes your outermost tangible reality. In our new movie that's just come out this week, it's going bang gangbusters, How Thoughts Become Things. I'm emphasizing that. The people there are emphasizing how to be focused on what you really want instead of letting the world on the outside distract you from what's inspiring to you. So yeah, anxiety is a compounding of a phobia that is because of a receptivity that is skewed because of subconscious baggage that hasn't been cleared, that hasn't done it. Quality of your life is based on the quality of the question, Jesse. If you ask quality questions, you clear that. And I can show you how to do that. I look forward to doing that someday.
Dr. DeMartini, earlier you mentioned the seven areas of life and the seven fears related to each area of life. Can you please explain that a bit more and practical tools in terms of how to overcome those seven fears?
Okay. Because fear is simply an assumption of one-sidedness, there's a number of things you can do to do it. Like I said, there's the fear of not knowing something. If you have, let's say you've been asked to do a public speech, and that's not something you're accustomed to do. although I would advise you to master the art of speaking, because it's one of the greatest leveraging things you'll ever have is speaking. But if you speak and I ask you to speak about your life, about a portion of your life to a group of kindergarten kids, you wouldn't have a problem. Because you know the topic, it's your life, and the kindergarten kids wouldn't intimidate you. If I asked you to do a talk to high school or less, elementary school or high school, and they were about your life again, or about some topic you were very thoroughly know about, you would have a problem. But the moment you go out and you have to speak in front of somebody that you think has more knowledge than you, and their opinion is more important than you, and you're now speaking about something you're not confident about, you're going to have the fear. And the fear is letting you know that you're pursuing a delusion and exaggerating what you know with your pride and putting yourself into a humbling situation. And you're not speaking up about that. So you're assuming there's going to be more drawbacks and benefits because your pride is going to get humbled and you're going to all of a sudden find out that you don't know what you know if they speak up and ask you a question. So don't waste your time pursuing speaking about something you don't know. If you're not certain about it, keep your mouth shut. If it's not something you know more than they do about, don't share it. Why would you want to share something that they know more about it? So that's feedback to have a normal response, to let you know that you're not being authentic or you're exaggerating what you know, or you're talking outside your core competence. So the fear of not knowing is a fear, but it's a feedback to let you know that you're not being authentic and you're exaggerating yourself and you're distorting and you're not really sticking to what you know and building it. You always start with what you know and let what you know grow. That's wisdom. So you're also afraid that if all of a sudden they said, no, what you said is not true, that that's the end of the world. And you have a fantasy of success and a fear of failure. The pursuit of success is the source of people's failures, by the way. So I don't pursue success or avoid failure. I'm a man on a mission, and I include both of them as feedback systems. The second you think you're successful, you depurpose. The second you think you're failure, you repurpose. So both of them are necessary. But if you get an addiction to one side because of the fantasy, the other side's frightening. And so they could point that out, and you're frightened of that. But if you find the benefits of their feedback, and say, thank you, I didn't know that. Thank you. I'll research that further. Appreciate the feedback. And you're focused on learning when you're sharing, and sticking to what you know, so the probability of them having to say that is low, you don't have that fear. When it comes to business, the moment you're going out and having fear about business, again, is what I've already said. It's because you're pursuing something you're not certain that customer wants, and you're pursuing something that's not most effective and efficient in the strategy that can compete, and you're not doing something that's really inspiring to you to where you would want to go and learn it and master it and become more effective and efficient at it to compete, you're probably getting a feedback from the world around you that you're not pursuing what's really meaningful to you, and you're not doing it in a way that's really fulfilling and meaningful to the people where they want to buy it. So all that's really a feedback. So if you understand the benefits of what it's offering to you, you won't be so anxious about it. You'll use it if it comes up to go and refine what you're doing and what you're selling or what you're presenting. So these are all feedback systems. Fear is a feedback. It's not the end of the world, it's a feedback. But if we get addicted to fantasies, it hurts and we want to avoid it. The more the pleasure of success is, the more painful the failure is. If success is not your aim and you're there to be on a man of mission and you get feedback from people, you're grateful because you just get more powerful in knowing. And the same in fear and money. If you're infatuated with money, you're going to fear the loss of it. If you understand what money represents, it's a transactional to measure of fair exchange transactions that are sustainable. And so what it does is it gives you feedback to let you know that if you're losing money to a customer and they're saying no, or to a competitor because they're doing it more effective than you, it's feedback to let you know that you're not caring about the customer enough to get the needs met thoroughly in a more effective and efficient way than that person over there. And that's why they're getting the business. People are going to go where they get the most value for the buck. And you have to make sure it's something you're inspired by to continue to want to learn, to become more effective and efficient, to master the skill and be creative. When you're living in your highest values, you generate the most innovative, creative, genius ideas and have foresight and can anticipate things and think ahead and are prepared. So it's forcing you to go back to what's really valuable to you. It's forcing you to go back to meeting what's really valuable to the customer. It's a gift. Fears are your friends. They're not your enemies if they're perceived properly. But if we got a fantasy that life's supposed to be easy, I'm supposed to be proud, I'm supposed to know everything, then all of a sudden those are all going to be frightening because you're going to have the things that are going to humble all those illusions. When it comes to relationship, you feel the loss of somebody. The only person who's going to leave you, the only reason why your spouse is going to leave you, for instance, is very simple. They're on the planet to fulfill what they value most. And they're going to do whatever it takes to get the greatest advantage over a disadvantage in their minds. And if they don't perceive that you're the greatest package, they're going to go somewhere else. And if you're not stepping up and empowering as many areas of your life, then why would they stay with you? Nobody's committed to you. They're committed to fulfilling of their values. And they got involved in you because they thought there's going to be more advantages and disadvantages being with you compared to somebody else in the marketplace. So if you're fearing the loss of somebody, it's helping you stand up. Two things. Either you were in the underdog position and were infatuated with them and you're fearing the loss of them and it's giving you the opportunity to step up, or to be freed from the burden of trying to be somebody you're not that you're trying to play the act on. So either it steps you up, makes you more effective and efficient, offers more value in the seven areas of life. A woman is looking for somebody who's nice looking and fit, somebody presents them well, self well, somebody who's intelligent, somebody who's ambitious, somebody who's got resources, somebody that cares about them and would love to be with them, maybe have children with them, somebody that has social savvy, somebody who's basically inspired by something. Any of those areas that drop and that you're not offering to your mate, you got to ask what's in it for them to be with you. If you don't have something to offer them, of course they're going to go on. And if you have a fear of that, it's because you're the underdog. If you're confident and you know that, you're more likely to move on than they are because they get the deal. So the best thing to do is to see that as a feedback to empower your areas and keep upgrading. You are not going to escape that. If you're not working and empowering yourself, you're disempowering yourself. And if you're not empowering yourself, other people will overpower you and take you over. And if you're jealous of somebody, it's because you're thinking they've got something you don't. And they're making you aware of what you're denying inside that you actually have but aren't honoring it and haven't brought it to the surface. In the Breakthrough Experience, I show people how to own the traits of the greats. So there's no matter what they see in somebody around them, they can find it inside them and wake it up and play in the same field of possibility. So they're not having to live in the fear of loss. Not in the fear of I don't know. Not in the fear of rejection or, the failure. Those are all signs of subordination to other people and trying to live in other people's values and disempowering yourself compared to other people. That's all it is. And then there's the next one, socially, the fear of rejection. The only people we feel rejection from, if a little kid comes on a bicycle next to you and you look down at him and you don't think that he's got more than you, and he says, oh, screw you, buddy, and shoots a finger at you or something, you don't think about it. You just chuckle and think, well, that's an interesting kid. But if all of a sudden somebody you look really up to comes up, pulls up in a limo, rolls down the window, and cusses you out and said you're a loser or something like that, now it hurts because you believe that their opinion of you is more important than your own. And the fear of rejection is basically because of you subordinating to somebody else's opinion. And then that's the feedback to let you know that you haven't owned the traits that you admired in them. You're playing small and you're living as an envy and an imitation of them instead of actually standing on their shoulders and realizing what you have in life. So those are all feedback and gifts to you. And physically, if you're thinking, well, I don't have the beauty they do or whatever, well, that'll do one of two things. It'll either help you empower the other areas that are aphrodisiacs in your relationship or make you get out and get off your butt and go and work out, get your ass in shape, your abs in shape, and get your boobs in shape, get your life in shape again. So you can't lose by that. It'll catalyze it. And in the process of doing it, I've seen many times people have affairs and then their spouses get back in shape. They get back on that, they were let themselves go and now they're back in shape. So that could be a great opportunity, the fear of that. And the same thing with spirituality. We subordinate to some spiritual gurus out there, or spiritual thinkers out there, and not realize that we, in our own mission that inspire us, are contributing to spirituality as much as any other human being. It's because whatever is inspiring to people is the spiritual. Some are dedicated to raising a family of kids, and that's their spiritual path. Others are business, that's their spiritual path. and somebody that's doing something in social causes. And there's some that want to go and do meditation and yoga and physically get fit or whatever. That's the spiritual path. There is nothing limited in the spiritual. When people say, you know, that's not spiritual, that's spiritual, that's just a projection of their own limited values and narrow-mindedness to not see that it's all spiritual. In the breakthrough experience, I show people that it's all spiritual. There's nothing that can go on in your life in any split moment in your perception that you can't see synchronously and be inspired by and see as part of a magnificent order, an implicate order and divine order in life. And if the divinity is omnipresent in theology, then where is it not? It's in every experience in life. So subordinating to somebody else you think has more of that than you is just delusional. So most of the fears are a result of subordination to people you put on pedestals. In the breakthrough experience, I show you how to transcend that. So you're not living in shadows. You're standing on shoulders and playing a new platform. Because what we do is we compare ourselves to others instead of compare our own daily actions to our own highest values. If we do that, we don't have some of those problems. So our fears are not our enemies. And I know a lot of people say that, you know, you got to get rid of your fear and that's a weakness. No, it isn't. I know some very powerful people on the planet that have fears whenever they set unrealistic expectations and fantasies, and they have to learn from that. So your fears are feedback systems to guide you to set authentic, objective goals with foresight that you're inspired by that serve.
Dr. DiMartini, that leads me to my next question. If we're living by inspired vision, does it mean that we won't experience fear at all?
Okay, that's a great question. In the moments when you're in grace, when you see the hidden order of life and you realize nothing's out of order, you have no desire to change you relative to others, no desire to change others relative to you, no desire to fix anything, it's all in order and you're grateful. In that moment, you're not in fear. You're not in fantasy. You're seeing the implicate order, as David Bohm described. You're seeing the, as Leibniz said, the perfection. That's just a moment. Nobody stays there. When somebody comes along and says, well, my guru always stays there. No, he doesn't. No, she doesn't. That's bullshit. You don't grow there. You have a moment of confirmation of the hidden order of life. But the moment you get that, you immediately get promoted to the next illusion that's probably stored in your subconscious mind to work on, to grow again. The planet is an infinitesimal. It's 24,000 miles, 200 miles, you know, 24,800 miles around. It's spinning around in 24 hours. 8,000 miles, you know, in diameter. It's 93 million miles roughly between perihelion and aphelion away from the sun. 8 minutes of travel, one astronomical unit. It's going around the sun. It's slightly angled about 23.5 degrees, so it's giving you the seasons. It's going around the thing in 365 and a quarter days. The solar system is moving around the Milky Way about 26 to 27,000 light years away from the Milky Way. It's taken about 200 million years, 180 million years, something like that, going around the Milky Way, traveling in a pretty good clip through space. It's oscillating around like a spiraling carousel in a carnival. That Milky Way is part of a local group of a series of Milky Way kind of galaxies, which is part of a Virgo cluster of galaxies, which is part of a little portion of a web of a super galaxy cluster called Mauna Kea, which is a tiny speck that's indiscernible in a network of super galaxy clusters that make up a cluster, part of a filament of networks with thousands and thousands and billions of others, making up the cosmic web, the cosmic foam of just the observable universe. And that's only what we observed. And that's an insignificant speck in compared to the what they believe the universe is. And that may be potentially finite or infinite, depending on the theory. So when we stop and think about what we know here, it ain't beginning. It's not even begun. Our level of knowledge, that's why Einstein said, live with holy curiosity. Don't live in the idea, well, there's the answer. That's some of the problem with some of the religious dogma. It comes in and says, there's the answer, and that's it. Then you just memorize that deductively and impose that on the world and stop your growth. The amount of knowledge that's coming in from every field, even though there's skewed and misinformation, still there's great wisdom coming in daily. The amount of that will keep the most ingenious individual busier than they can be, keeping up with it all. And so we're growing in our knowledge. Our concept and time of Aristotle with the world was the cosmos. We had a geocentric world, and the out primal mobile world of the fixed stars was the edge of the universe, and there was a divine outside, and there was human down, and angels in between, and animals beneath. That construct got changed. All the time that Copernicus had an inflash, Copernicus had a revolution, turned to a heliocentric system and expanded. Even though there were times of people in Aristotle, there were people that saw it, they didn't get to be heard as much. Aristotle had more clout. Then all of a sudden, Thomas Wright looks out in the telescope and sees, oh my God, it looks like there's more than one Milky Way. And those Galileo and all those guys start saying there's multiple Milky Ways and there's multiple galaxies. So by the time the 1800s came along, 1700s, 1800s, and now 1900s, there's a vast universe. And all of our constructs, philosophically, theologically, syncretically, had to keep developing. And so there's no end to knowing. There's just a continuous expansion. So the second you think that you've got your shit together, you find out you're constipated. You learn by continually growing. So if you have a moment of grace, a moment of inspiration, that just means that you have a confirmation and locked in for a moment in your awareness, the hidden order. And you're now ready to tackle the next mystery in your journey. And then when you do, you'll bring that to order. And then you'll go into the next mystery. And then you'll bring that to order. That's what history's demonstrating. That's what we're here for. In the breakthrough experience, I show you how to find that order. Because every time you find the order, you no longer stagnate in the whirligurg, as the Buddhists called a karmic wheel. You're transcending that with dharmic purposeful movement. And that's not stagnation, that's evolution. There's revolution or evolution. And evolution is when you synthesize and objectively pursue something and contribute in a fair exchange. And you see the order of that. And you then are rewarded economically in all the areas of life. Or we're caught in a whirligurg of dissociation and blame things on the outside, look for solutions at it. I'm going to confront something right now. Right now, we're sitting here blaming a virus and then looking for a hero with a vaccine. That's a dissociative, polarized, incomplete awareness. When the facts are, the majority of people have an immune system that are responding and not having a problem. So it's not about that. Those are the people that are usually having kind of infirmaries and weaknesses already in the immune system because they're banging their head against the wall and not seeing nature as it is, but as they fantasize it should be. And they run themselves down and then they're vulnerable as a feedback to try to get back on track. But if you're sitting there living an inspired life, you don't blame things on the outside, look for solutions on the outside. You don't blame a devil and look for a savior. You are realizing that you have all those things outside you. They're reflections of you on the inside, that on the outside to the inside, and that you have all that. There's nothing missing in you. And in the process of realizing there's nothing missing in you, you empower your life. The Gnostics called it pleroma, where you open the vastness and the vision of what's possible to you. And you continue to live with holy curiosity and tackle the next mystery. It's how many mysteries and how many challenges and what's the size of the challenges that you can pursue in one life that determines your fulfillment in life. Not sitting there living in a cloistered, isolated, frustrated system. So time to break out and break through. In the breakthrough experience, I want people to give themselves permission not to be part of the herd instinct, not be sitting there in cloistered, isolation for their own life. I want them to be able to stand walking the path of an unborrowed visionary and do something that they feel inspired to do that makes a contribution. That's how they leave their legacy on the planet. That's how you have fulfillment on the planet. And so, yeah, you have moments of inspiration in your present, but you're going to have the next challenge and the next illusion, and then you're going to tackle that. And you want to embrace that, because every time you take on the next challenge about yourself and the next illusion about yourself and the next stored subconsciously baggage in yourself, and break through that, you lighten your load, you build up a superconscious system, you accumulate an awareness and wisdom that you can exemplify and you can pass down and carry on and help other people with. And that's the fulfillment life. So no, you're not going to stay enlightened, inspired and all day long. That's fantasy. There's nobody that does that. Anybody that's selling you that is a liar and a facade. There's a human being that's growing and there's no end to the growth, no matter how much we know. No guru, no one is scientist. Nobody knows it all. They know what they know. I know what I know. But outside, I love learning every single day. I'm researching every friggin' day, trying to add to that, solving the next mystery, as they say. So So you're looking for the challenge. People who are leaders pursue challenges that inspire them. People who are followers are trying to avoid challenges that inspire them. And it's futile.
I'm sure you'll agree that this time with Dr. DeMartini was really valuable. Remember when focusing on your vision to set goals that are congruent with what's truly important to you. And then start with what you know and let what you know grow. If you found this session valuable and you'd love to continue to learn from Dr. DeMartini, please click the subscribe button so that you're notified when we add the next episode. We'd also love to invite you to join us on Dr. DeMartini's Stay Inspired Facebook group, which you can access by linking to demartini.inc/inspired. You'll also find the link in the show notes. It's an inspired community of like-minded people from all over the world with a common value on empowering their lives. You'll have access to Dr. DeMartini and many of his education pieces that will keep you inspired. Our goal in the community is to help you to stay focused on your vision and to keep on expanding your life throughout this global pandemic. So come and join us as soon as you can on demartini.inc/inspired. Well, that's it for this episode. We look forward to sharing more inspiration from Dr. DeMartini shortly. Until next time, keep looking for the many blessings, because the more you find, the more inspired you'll feel, regardless of what's going on in your outer world.